Zeno. Nothing else comes close.
Sanderson bumping with Sweeney on the wall. Carter taken out by Brown. Kick into Rasmussen. Rasmussen got it in front. They shot the score! CB radios that one home. Curtis Brown on a nifty pass from Rasmussen. And it's 3-1 Buffalo.
And the Buffalo pressure again on the Boston defense. Sweeney ended up turning the puck over after Buffalo forechecked him, and Curtis Brown scores a huge goal to give Buffalo a two-goal lead. But a scrum along the boards, and Buffalo wins the battle. What a play by Rasmussen to move to the front of the net. The goaltender Defoe overcommits himself, and Curtis Brown steps around the Boston defender, Steve Hines, and slips it into the net.
In position to clinch tonight against the Boston Bruins for the third time in franchise history, having won with Mayday, of course, in 93, and Curtis Brown's efforts in 1999. Great to have you with us on Sabres Live today with Marty and Jackie Redmond from TNT.
So excited.
So great to have you in studio, Jackie.
Jackie, you don't know, but you're like our Matt Damon.
What?
Because, and I'll start with that. So I think like maybe 2 years ago or 3 years ago, we were maybe going to have you on.
Okay. From Montreal.
Yeah.
At the draft.
At the draft. That's right. We're okay. In the show. And then something happened and maybe you had to cancel or the message didn't get through. And we're like, we're going to have Jackie Redmond. We promise you. We promise you. And then it never happened.
No.
So we were like, you're like our Matt Damon on the Jimmy Kimmel show where he says, sorry, Matt, we didn't have time for you.
I know.
And it's
story.
A running joke. So you're our Matt Damon.
Well, I'm here now. How you like
that's
them apples.
Perfect.
Right? Okay.
Because the timing couldn't be better because you've already invested in this series,
yes,
having worked game 3 and 4 amidst all of your first round travels. So we wanted to start bringing the audience in and asking you with our poll question today.
Ooh.
At Sabres Live, who has been the Sabres MVP so far in this series? Alex Tuch, Bo Byram, Alex Lyon, or other, which has not copped a vote yet. Bo Byram, thanks to Marty's influence on the show yesterday, sitting at 78%.
Wow. Okay, so not surprised to see that Bo Byram is getting a large chunk of the votes. I am surprised that nobody voted other, because I think that when you look at the players that have had a lot of impact on this team, there's a lot of guys that you could bring up, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think Owen Power has made his mark on this series.
Big time.
I think Peyton Krebs deserves a ton of credit. And then, you know, something I've been looking at getting ready for this game is the ice time amongst the forwards.
Yeah.
And you hear, I mean, you guys know this. How many times in the playoffs do we hear guys say, well, we roll four lines? A lot of times that's a lie. Like, that's a lie when you look at the ice time amongst the forwards. But you look through four games, not just the last one, because a blowout is different. But you look at the ice time distribution amongst the forwards through four games, and it is rare that more than one, maybe two players gets more than 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And only a couple are under 12. And I think for, you know, especially your bottom six, it's hard to get in a game if you're only playing 6-7 minutes. But when the majority of your forwards are getting more than 12 minutes, you got something cooking. Mm-hmm. And it's not always going to be like that. And if the Sabres go on a deep run, it will change at times based on games.
There has been change, obviously,
right?
With the Norris injury
Kozak,
right? So it's not.
But
been,
I just think it speaks to the fact that they're getting impactful play from a lot of their guys right now. And that makes the Sabres dangerous. But yeah, I think, I don't know, I love Peyton Krebs right now.
We have an update on the poll.
Oh, there's a write-in vote.
We have a write-in vote.
Who is it?
The Blade Gang.
The Blade Gang is the write-in vote. Yes, okay. I think that the Blade Gang, which acquired Rob Ray as their enforcer last game in Boston, like that is pretty significant.
And has Lindy Ruff lobbying to be a part of them.
Part of it.
Yeah.
They're doing something right.
They are.
Well, here in Buffalo, you know, they start at their house, and it's about like 5 or 6 miles, maybe even more, from the arena. So they skate all the way from their driveway down to the game. Like, it's a 6 or 7 mile like skate. That's committed right there.
I absolutely love it. And I actually tweeted this yesterday. Like, there are so many people, not Buffalo folks, I'm sure, that are so like upset by this Blade Gang. And I was like, are we really mad about rollerblades right now? Like, we need to like have a little joy in your life, you know?
Yeah,
like, it's okay. We're having fun. with a team that hasn't been in this position in so long. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy for the Blade Gang. I'm happy that they're representing sort of the Sabres fan culture right now, because they should enjoy it. It's been a long time.
So when you talk about Peyton Krebs and some of the others, I think the speed of the Sabres has been like the difference in game three and four. Like halfway in game three, Lyon makes a save on Arvidsson on the penalty shot. Then all of a sudden that speed kind of comes out. Do you feel like when you talk to the Bruins that, like, I look at them, I feel like they're getting tired. Do you get a sense that the speed of the Sabres is impacted more than they thought it was going to be?
I think, I don't know if they're fatigued by it. I haven't had those conversations, but I do think that it's undeniable at this point that the Sabres have found their speed game, and it's helping them win this series to this point. So I think the Sabres, or excuse me, the Bruins, I think we know they came into this thinking that if they were physical and big, that they could kind of push the Sabres around a little bit, but that's not really happening. And I kind of love that at the end of the last game, you know, the Bruins lose their cool, they lose their frustration, that's fair, it was a terrible performance. But the Sabres, like, they weren't backing away from anything.
No.
I mean, Zach Benson's being, like, manhandled by a ref or a linesman, and like, I think it just goes to show that it's maybe Boston underestimated how much fight these Sabres actually have in them. But in terms of the actual gameplay, the speed is working for Buffalo. And I think that there were times early in the series where I thought, like, is Buffalo getting kind of sucked into the way Boston wants to play? And those games were tighter.
Yeah.
And I think in the last two, you know, Buffalo is really, they just look more comfortable. Don't you think? Like, they just look like they're just have a little bit of, there's no hesitation in their game, maybe,
for
is
sure.
what I'm looking for.
And I think the post-game quotes most recently reflect that, because without hesitation, a number of players spoke to getting to their game, which is the game that we've seen most often since December 9th, when they've been the best team in the NHL. So in the first couple of games here, it resembled more of what the season series had been between these two, which
agreed.
Was some frustration, almost inability at times for the Sabres to work their way to their game. Like, they just kind of fall into, you know, being a victim of the style that Boston was playing, right? But as we know, it changes on a dime in just about every situation. Tonight, we're expecting Kozak and Zucker and Norris to all be available, according to the coach. It's unlikely, I think, optics-wise at this point that Norris will go. But, from a Sabre standpoint, both of you, like, what do you think they're feeling after all this time and everything that's been said about every situation since 2011 with this opportunity to clinch?
Oh, man.
Well, it's hard because, I mean, Lindy Ruff's talked about it already. He says, you know what you're going to get from Boston is every puck battle, they'll be desperate for that puck battle. Every moment of the game, start of the game, start of the second period, they're going to bring the most desperate game that they can bring. And there's also trying to manage your emotions. And Jackie, you were game three and four in Boston. You haven't seen a game in Buffalo yet. Like, when the game starts, it's going to be wild. And as a player, that's where you have to breathe through your nose, exhale through your mouth, kind of calm you down, because you don't want to get sucked in. I know the emotions are fun, but you don't want to get sucked in into being too hyper and making mistakes, because you're running on adrenaline as opposed to composure and what has been working. But what do you think, like, the start of game for you, seeing, like, the fan base reacting to this 3-1 lead and having a chance to clinch?
I'm so excited because, fortunately for me, I had a few Sabres games down the stretch of the regular season, including their last game against the Dallas Stars, which, two very good teams, but the game meant absolutely nothing, right? Like, no team was fighting for home ice. Like, it was just a normal game. Of course, it went to a shootout, but even in the shootout, the crowd was losing their minds watching the end of this game, and I was it just showed me how reinvigorated this fan base is to see their team winning. And I think, based on the way they played in Boston, I think we're gonna see the fans sort of applaud them for that. The series, of course, is not over, but I think the fans are excited to kind of show the team how proud they are of what they've done to this point. But to your point, I do think, even when you're the home team, a really, really crazy atmosphere, it can work for you. It can also work against you, yeah. even if they are cheering for you. I mean, it is a crazy thing. I was at the Bell Center last week. I'd never done a playoff game there that wasn't like a pandemic playoff game, which is different. And even for me, I was doing a stand-up, and I was like, oh, my gosh, I got to calm down. I don't want to yell at the people.
Exactly.
I think I did yell at the people, to be honest. Like, I don't think I handled it well.
That's what I do all the time.
But we wondered that very same thing in our first segment of the pregame on night one of the playoffs because we, of course, had not been in that situation here. And I talked to Marty after. I said, I went back and reviewed the tape just to make sure we weren't yelling because it had been so loud and none of us could hear each other in the moment, but you're just basically running on instincts. And that kind of, you know, takes us where we want to go with you because we promise like hockey talk and personal talk. Yeah. So like, when did these hockey emotions first start bubbling for you?
As you mean like
a young person?
Oh,
like, where did the love of the game come from? What are the early memories as far as NHL or other hockey? Like, where did it all start?
Well, you know, it's funny. I've been asked this question before, and I always say that there's no moment I can point to where I became a hockey fan because it was hockey was such a part of the fabric of my upbringing. Like, I just don't know when it started.
Sure.
I think I was always sat in front of hockey games, hockey night in Canada, watching the Maple Leafs. And, you know, yeah, you want to talk about a desperate fan base, my goodness, but I don't want to talk about them. But I just think as a kid, you know, when that's just a part of your family's dynamic, there is no moment, right? I was on skates when I was three, started figure skating, switched over to hockey because my sister was playing. I actually saw her. The reason I switched from figure skating to hockey was because my sister was in a tournament and someone slashed her goalie, and the girl was about a foot and a half taller than my sister. My sister, like Roman Reigns, speared this girl. And a huge scrum ensues, and I look at my mom watching the game from the stands. I was like, I think I want to play hockey. Like, that looks way more fun. And so I switched. But to go back to your question, it's just something that's always been there for me. I remember I was very, very young when the Leafs played the Kings, but I remember my dad's reaction to the infamous high stick.
Yep.
I remember Doug Gilmore having cow legs in a milk commercial and wanting to and going to Doug Gilmore opened a restaurant in London, Ontario. That's where I grew up. I remember waiting outside trying to get in so that me and my sister could get our posters signed. Like, do kids still put posters on their wall or posters? A thing.
Yeah, I think they do.
Okay.
We didn't get in,
by the way. It was so packed and we weren't there early enough. We didn't get in. Me and my sister both cried because we just wanted an autograph from, at that time, you know, you weren't getting selfies. You were getting photos and autographs. Didn't get it. And so I've always just been obsessed with the sport. And then as I got older, like, you know, for me and my dad, who has been my best friend my whole life, it really is the core of our relationship in a lot of ways. It's where I gained a lot. You know, I used to listen to I used to listen to post-game radio with my dad in the garage. As I got older, I wanted to stay up.
Yeah, but did you ever listen to it through so much static that there's no way anybody else could decipher what you were hearing?
I don't know. But I remember.
I must have driven so many people crazy trying to fine-tune a radio dial and barely be able to make out words, but in my mind, I could still see
you
the theater
everything.
Of it all. Yeah, and it was all sports, not just hockey.
And it was such a great, like, way to, like, obviously build my relationship with my dad, but I think, you know, in retrospect, I didn't realize this at the time, but, like, you know, callers call in, they ask things about the game, you know, should Tucker really be on the first line with Matt Sundin? Things like of this nature. And my dad would talk to me about it, and I think as I got older, what I realized is that because of those experiences, my dad made me have confidence in my own voice, that I could talk hockey. As a female, you know, I don't know that I would have that without my father. So as I got older, I always felt the most comfortable talking hockey. And I think when you're an awkward teenager, there are very few spaces where you have confidence. And that was one where I had it. So, I love the game for so many reasons, but that's probably the biggest one.
Obviously, a competitive person has to kind of rely on that competitiveness to come through the steps in whatever, being, you know, a young broadcaster to finding your ways through Canadian networks to NHL Network to TNT to everything that you've done. But there's also an aspect of you that With other sports. Mm-hmm. We've been searching online and pictures on Instagram. So pickleball is something that you have got involved in.
You don't want to go this road. Okay, you don't want to go down this road.
So you're a competitive pickleball player right now?
I would describe myself as competitive. Okay. I only started playing about 2 years ago. My husband is much better than me. He is in Buffalo right now playing pickleball.
Is he playing with Yarmo? Because he did play with Yarmo. Out in Milan, we have a picture of Emmett with
Yarmo. Let me tell you something right now. My husband has become so tight with Yarmo Kekäläinen since the Olympics in Italy. It's actually laughable. Like, I joke with Emmett now. I go, I'm going to turn around next year, and you're going to have some fake job with the Sabres just so that you can be around to play pickleball with Yarmo Kekäläinen. But if you're going to be out there playing with Yarmo, I need you to get me some information here. Like, help a girl out.
He's going to be a regular on Sabres Live.
Give us the pickleball update.
Listen, I am obsessed with pickleball. Anytime I am home and I have time off, like, I'll go play 4 or 5 hours.
Oh, really?
I went home between games 4 and 5 very quickly to Nova Scotia, and I got 3 hours of pickleball in because I'm so obsessed. But Yarmo and my husband have it on a whole, like, it's a whole other level. Wow. So,
what was the first network you worked at in radio? Television, any
the Score Television
media?
Network.
That was my the first one for you?
It was my first paid media job.
Wow.
I did a lot of Rogers TV, the community stations.
Yeah,
I don't even know if they have them anymore.
Yeah.
So I did a lot of volunteer work there and some reporting, but my first paid TV gig was the Score Television
alumni,
network.
The two of us.
Alumni, yes.
Hashtag.
I'm OG because I was headline sports before it even became the Score. So
were you there with Cam Stewart?
Cam, I think... Like, I was only, it feels like I was there forever.
Okay.
But it was actually a very short period of time.
Okay,
it was like 97 until mid-98 when we, you know, launched. I feel like Cam came after.
Okay,
but
the raging redhead, for those who don't know.
Raging redhead, yeah. But the thing is, like, Cam was ahead of his time as far as, like.
I was going to say that.
The
gambling?
Know, the gambling, right? Like, that, and, of course, the Score, Headline Sports, was probably
ticker.
Famous because they had the ticker that never
the
went
ticker,
away.
It was providing first.
It was providing all that kind of information.
Yeah. By the way, like, if you are somebody that like gambles on sports, Cam Stewart Live, I think, is his Twitter handle. Like, give him a follow. He's still doing it.
Yeah.
Still making picks.
Elliot Friedman, of course, was there.
Yeah. Elliot's probably like, would we say he's like the biggest big dog to come out of?
I mean there have been like Cabby.
Cabby did really well too. Yeah, Cabby's a big one. Cabby on the street.
Cabby on the street. Yeah.
So many.
That's when, like, TSN was there, and then Sportsnet had their spot in that in that CTV kind of campus or whatever. Was the Score there as well? Was the Score
downtown?
No, the Score was
downtown.
King and Peter Street,
yep.
Right in the heart of everything, which was great. Like, when I started there, I worked with Cam Stewart. One of the first live shows I ever, actually maybe the first live show I ever did, was called Live at the Score. And we would make picks on that show. Like, there's old footage somewhere of me making picks, all right? In like 2012. But I was so young. Like, I was really...
This was after your fandom of Taylor Swift had already started. We also discovered...
I've been with her since the beginning.
And we discovered an old tweet here on...
So
did you manage to...
2009. You said
2009?
You needed T-Swizzle tickets. Wants T-Swizzle tickets.
What a basic tweet. I actually, like, can't even fathom
Jackie,
the person I was.
Less is more.
That.
Less Once, is more. This is perfect.
She's direct. She's to the point, as every reporter should be. You can't ramble on and on.
No punctuation. No capitalization other than T-Swizzle. But
I also, who was going to give me tickets then? I was, like, in college at the point of that tweet.
That's why you were asking.
Wants T-Swizzle tickets.
So you're an original,
by the way.
You're an original Taylor Swift fan?
I've loved her since Tim McGraw.
Okay. And did you get those tickets? Have you seen her many times?
I didn't get them in 2009, but I have seen her, I think, 4 times.
Oh,
I saw her twice on the Eras Tour. So I saw her in Philly, and then I saw her in Toronto.
Okay.
I saw the Red Tour in Toronto. I saw the Reputation Tour in New Jersey at MetLife. I think there's one more, but I don't. 1989 tour I had to have seen.
Were
I don't remember,
you like
5 times
when Life of a Showgirl came out? Like, were you looking at all the Easter eggs and all the hints and trying to figure it all out?
So, if you asked me in 2009 if I was a Swiftie, I'd say yes. that term has changed meaning over the years.
Yeah.
I'm not one of these. Like, I don't have time to be looking for Easter eggs. Right. And I respect the game. I respect the game. I am not actively playing it, though.
What about your merch line? What is your favorite Jackie Redmond item available?
I don't think I have that many. No? I have one that's Monday Night Redmond. Oh, you guys found that, eh?
This producer Sam website. Does not miss anything.
Oh, I know. So you know what's so funny about this? I've never really promoted this publicly. A friend of mine from the Score days, actually, that worked at the Score, helped me put this together. And I was like, I'm going to start like trying to like, you know, it's like sometimes you're like, I got to help myself out. You know, I got to make the most. So design that hoodie.
Birthday's coming up.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Thank you.
Okay. I don't even have, I have the Monday Night Redmond t-shirt, and I did see someone at WrestleMania. I did my first ever meet and greet in life, and someone was wearing that shirt, and I was like, oh, you are a real one, because I didn't even promote that. Like, you found that on your own.
Yeah.
But yeah, wow, you guys do your homework on this show.
It's all producer Sam, trust us.
Crazy.
No. Sam goes in deep, and obviously, you know, but would you say that's an advice you would give young up-and-comers, like reporters, analysts, want to get in the game, to try to branch out to everything? Because merch and website and social media is a big part of that now.
It's I always say to people, too, when they ask me, and students and younger people that are just starting out, it's like, you're getting into this at sort of like the best and the worst time. Because the best part of it is that, like, you can actually create content yourself. You want to be a writer? You can write. And you can actually get it out on a platform where people can find it. You want to talk hockey? You can do a podcast. I mean, everyone has a podcast. That's the downside. There's so many. But use that stuff. Because even if your podcast doesn't blow up or nobody reads your article, you're exercising the muscle, right? And I just think a lot, at least in my experience, I think what holds a lot of people back is they just want the success right away. And they don't want to do the thing that they say they want to do. So it's like, if you're a writer, write. Don't wait for someone to pay you to write. Go write. Go do the thing. And that way, when those opportunities come, you are going to be ready for it. I used to use a teleprompter website in my kitchen and do like fake highlight shows, fake studio shows. My dad used to make fun of me. He was like, you're a dork, like, you're 19 years old, like, go drink. And I was like, I do drink, dad, it's fine. I'm Canadian, that's okay, the drinking age is 19.
I've been doing it for 2 years, but that's okay.
Yeah.
Nobody ID'd me back when I was 17. That's
so
okay.
You know, my point is that, like, nobody, I didn't get a job out of those practice sessions that I made for myself. But when an opportunity came to do an audition, I had some reps of actually, what would I say? How do I speak in front of a camera? What works? What looks awkward is, I can't swear. What looks awkward when I watch it back, you know? Those types of things. And then I just think authenticity is so key. Don't try to, if, you know, we have a lot of personality-driven people in sports right now. I think it's wonderful. But if that's not who you are, like, be okay being the serious reporter. Mm-hmm. Be okay being the person that loves a good advanced stat or an old school, like, who are you? What do you care about? Do that. Don't try to be what you think people want, because that's when I think most people fail.
See the banner behind you? That's what I care about. Empty netters are for winners.
Empty netters are for winners. Yeah.
My this or that's over there.
Keep this in mind, case you didn't. The Sabres led the NHL in empty netters this year and lead the playoffs as well. So it has been
And face-offs only matters when they matter, because I think that...
Oh, talk to me about this.
Yeah, you know, face-offs, sometimes they don't matter. They only matter when they matter.
Face-offs are such a polarizing topic.
Yes.
But I think you're right. Like most things.
Yeah.
There are times when they are very important, and there are times when maybe they don't matter so much.
Do you have, and I apologize, because if someone asked me this, I would just
freeze.
Draw a blank and freeze.
Oh, gosh.
But do you have, like, a favorite memory, an interview, a person that you've just enjoyed interviewing because of that authenticity that you, like, you just know it, right? When you talk to someone, and sometimes you just... You feel like your questions are better because the answers just keep getting better all the time.
Yeah, so. I mean, I think that I could, if I sat down and thought about it, I could probably make a pretty good list. But off the top of my head, you know, I think early in my career of doing actual games, because I did studio for a long time, as you know, with NHL Network, but it's a different thing. It's a different thing than being in-game, interviewing coaches and doing stuff like that. And I think... For me, like, Paul Maurice means a lot to me, because he just lets you be who you are. and he embraces it, actually. Yeah. And so I felt so comfortable during those three runs to ask, like, what I wanted to ask and not worry about, like, is this a dumb question? Am I asking it right? Does it matter?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm going to ask a dumb question once in a while, but I think for the most part, when I ask what I'm intrigued about in a game, I'm going to get an answer.
Right.
You know what I mean? And yeah. It's going to tell me something. So,
and if you're thinking about it, there's somebody at home that's thinking exactly the same thing.
Someone's wondering, do you need to shoot more on the power play? No, just kidding. but someone's wondering.
Ask Lindy that tonight on the bench.
You know, my favorite Lindy interview actually was in a regular season game. McLeod shot and scored a goal. And there had been all this banter about how he doesn't shoot enough. And Lindy had made comments.
Yes.
So I went up and I was like, how happy are you to see him shoot the puck? And he went, I'm damn happy to see him shoot the puck. And I was like, you know, not every interview needs to be groundbreaking. Sometimes it just needs to be fun. The obvious thing that everyone is feeling. So I think he's won Paul Maurice. And I think, you know, Brad Marchand has been good to me over the years. I mean, there's so many. The Tkachuks have been great to me. Yeah, I think there's a lot.
Yeah.
I wish I could say more because there's certainly people I'm
missing. So NHL Network alum as well, the two of us. Is there
I'm an NHL Network alum,
this
too.
This is true.
Yes,
aren't
we
you?
Work together.
Freelance.
Yeah, you.
And,
well, freelance, Secaucus. He says.
Freelance, I mean,
unless you were under contract.
In Secaucus, New Jersey.
Benefits.
I didn't get benefits, though.
Oh, my God. That's so good.
I'm trying to think. There can't possibly be any other places that we've worked at. You were not... You would have loved probably working at Leafs TV, but you didn't.
Oh, I wanted to work at Leafs TV so bad when I was younger.
The irony was I didn't, but I spent 6 years there.
That's so funny. I remember emailing before I ever had a job, like any job in sports, zero jobs in sports. And I was finishing school, and I remember sending... I emailed almost every team in the NHL. I just guessed what the emails were, because at that time you couldn't easily find it. And I hit on almost every team... figuring out the email, and there were two teams that actually emailed me back with my my very, very crappy college demo. There was nothing else. I was all college, and I just was like, I just want to work for a hockey team. Like, I'll do anything. Digital was very small at that point. And the Leafs emailed me back, and the Ducks emailed me back. Yeah. Didn't end up working for either of them, but I think I got on the Scores reality show like maybe a year after that.
Amazing. Yeah. I got my first rejection letter from the Sabres in like the mid-90s, 94 or 95.
Wow.
And then I ended up working.
Do you still have it?
Yeah. And then I found it
that's
a couple
cool.
years ago.
Yeah,
and then
I
got hired in 2011, all those years later. It's crazy.
Wow, that's kind of nuts.
Yeah.
I love that.
Have a great game tonight. Thank you so much for coming in studio continued success.
Thank you. This is so fun. We didn't even talk about Alex Lyon. I wanted your guys' take on
him. Lion King.
The Lion King.
Oh, we'll have you back again.
Wow.
Now that you're a regular, we'll have you back again.
Jackie
thanks,
Redmond
guys.
From TNT. We've got a huge night in arena, and you don't even have to be inside the barn to get involved in this. The 50-50 raffle guaranteed jackpot. $150,000 presented by Northtown Automotive. You can buy your tickets now. Go to Sabres.com/50-50.
Of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Want your shot at winning great prizes? You can play the game of the night presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Just scan the QR code on the screen right here on MSG right now, or you can go to Sabres.com/Seneca to play. It is our casino corner in advance of Game 5 of this series. Sabres, Bruins, Buffalo leading 3-1. Opportunity to put the Bruins away for just the third time in franchise history.
Yep.
9 series all time. Buffalo having won in 93 and 99. They've actually not been in this exact situation very often, and that is Game 5 clinching opportunity at home. The first ever Sabres playoff series win in 1975 happened at the odd as they won in 4 against Chicago. It was 3-1. Four games to one. Rambling and confusing. Yeah, they won the game 3-1 is what I meant to say. They won the series 4-1. And then, of course, the only other time was also a win, and that was in 2007 in the opening round victory against the Islanders in five games, which, as we know, was a very hotly contested, difficult series for Buffalo, even though they would win it in five games.
Wade Dubowitz, Ted Nolan, was coaching the Islanders back then.
Max Afinogenoff had the game winner way back in the day in 75 in that first ever series win against the Hawks. Who do you think had the game winner in that deciding game?
In 75, I'm going to go Danny Gare.
Danny was a presence for sure.
I thought I had it. Your reaction was like, yes.
Rene Robert.
Oh, yeah.
And Jim Lorenz, of course, followed. The original Jerry D stopped 13 of 14.
Jerry Desjardins?
Yes.
Okay.
Stopped.
Well, for those that don't know, we were talking about Jerry D before.
No, that was off-air, I think.
That was off-air anyway, but if you're Canadian, you know what Jerry D is. The off-air and the on-air sometimes kind of blends in.
I just love the fact.
We had a long conversation with Jackie Redmond about the score, and you guys were both alum from the score, and how, like, so many comedian actors, other personalities have come up, come out of that network covering sports.
Yeah.
And Jerry D was one of them. 2006 was also a game five for those that are like, well, wait a second. The Sabres won game five in Ottawa in 2006. Yeah, it was in Ottawa. It wasn't in Buffalo. We're talking about chances to win in five in Buffalo and having succeeded in that. There's not
just
a lot of
instances.
Just the two situations, but game five in Ottawa was the Pominville goal, obviously another game five.
I will say this. This is my last memory from Headline Sports / the Score era, was being out at a bar in Toronto in 98 when Michael Grosick scored the game five OT winner against the Flyers, and just had a great group of friends at that time, and it was just a lot of fun. Like, sports is super competitive. Everybody's got their favorites and their harsh rivalries and perhaps an unwillingness to cheer for another team. I felt in that moment, out with an incredible group of friends, like everybody was genuinely happy for me because my team had moved on.
I was happy Michael Grosick scored in 98. I was a black ace with the Sabres in 97-98. We had lost in the first round to the Phantoms, the Philly Phantoms, and so we're following the team. Well, we enjoyed our time on the road. It was me, Jean-Luc Grandpierre, by the way, is going to be at the game here tonight,
perfect,
coming down with his
perfect
son, Eric Rasmussen, Jason Holland, Roman Ender, and Denis Hamel. There was all of us with head coach Brian McCutcheon doing extra skates, but we were on the road. We didn't have responsibilities. We didn't have curfews. We didn't have any of that. So we enjoyed our time on the road. How about that? 98, Buffalo wins in five against Philly and then sweeps the Canadians. Mm-hmm. That really cut in to our nightlife time.
Yeah.
I was not happy when double OT happened in game three, and because that did take away some of our time out in the town.
So real quick, tonight and game five and where we're at, Sabres lead 3-1, and anything within the game that you're anticipating need to verbalize here before we get to our pregame coverage at 7 p.m. tonight.
So it's easy for me. If the Sabres skate and they skate the way they did in the second half of Game 3 and in Game 4, it is going to put Boston in a position where they're going to basically do what they did in the two games in Boston and kind of look at the Sabres and, man, like, we keep running around. We're tired. We throw the pucks away. Like, all six of the Sabres' goals were coming from turnovers of Boston.
Mm-hmm.
So, but how do you create those turnovers is you're quick on the forecheck. You keep skating them. You get them tired. The body gets tired. The mind gets tired. You make mistakes. That's how Buffalo took advantage of the Bruins. I think that's the key for game five here. Tonight, the biggest thing is obviously the lineups at practice and the lines at practice yesterday were the same for Buffalo. Even though Lindy Ruff said Norris is available for game five, I personally don't anticipate Norris to be in the lineup because you played your best first period of hockey that Lindy Ruff said in all season. You can give Norris not just an extra night to rest and recuperate and treatments and all of that, but game six wouldn't be until Friday. So you'd have a couple more games. Mm-hmm. And I get it. It's the playoffs. Whenever you get an opportunity, you want to put that opportunity away. But I don't think the Sabres are handcuffed or limited by having Oslin play in the Norris spot and keep the fourth line the way they have. I think it all works fine for the Sabres, and it gives Norris a chance to just take a little bit of a break.
First game out of the chute tonight in the NHL, right here in Buffalo. Boston is in. It's game five. There are three games in total. There were two last night. We look across the league now and where everything stands. We've had two teams move on already, obviously, in number ones, Colorado and Carolina. And beyond the Sabres tonight, it's Minnesota-Dallas resuming their series, which is even at two. We have the opportunity for Anaheim on the road to eliminate the Edmonton Oilers. What a stunning turn of events this could be. What's your hunch on it?
My hunch is that the Anaheim Ducks are going to beat the Edmonton Oilers.
Wow.
Like, I have not liked the Oilers. I've not liked McDavid. I think he's banged up. He's hurt. He's playing 80% maybe. He's not been able to overcome the defensive issues that the Oilers have had this series and the amount of goals they've given up, 20 goals in four games, by the way.
Yep.
That's a lot. Over the last few years, the Oilers have always been able to use McDavid to say, we need a big goal, we need a couple of big goals, we need a big game.
Mm-hmm.
He's been there. I've not seen it out of McDavid, and this is a problem for the Oilers. So we have our game at 7:30. Minnesota-Dallas is at 8. That's on ESPN2. We're obviously on MSG, but if you're out of the Sabres market, you will get the Sabres game on TNT. We just had Jackie Redman covering the game. ESPN2 is Dallas-Minnesota, game 5, series tied at 2. That has been a tight series. I mean, it is a fun hockey. I'm telling you, if you have a chance, like, you know, at the end of the game, the Sabres game, to catch the end of Dallas-Minnesota, it's great. And then the Oilers-Anaheim is at 10 o'clock TNT.
Will the Pens complete the comeback on Philadelphia? Last night, they won for a second straight game with Sheloff's in goal. What was a 3-0 Flyers series lead is now 3-2 heading to Game 6.
Yeah, Michkov was benched last night, not playing for the Flyers. I think he comes back in Game 6.
Agreed.
But the Pittsburgh Penguins finally got to their game. In Game 1 and 2, they were awful. Game 3, Stuart Skinner wasn't great, so maybe it didn't help. But I feel like Sheloff's has given them a little bit of confidence, and they are playing their game right now. Philly's not getting a lot of opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Offensively, they're not, and Pittsburgh is playing tight defensively. I think Pittsburgh we'll push it to Game 7, but Philly will win a Game 7.
All right, and then the other game last night was, what a turn of events.
Vegas,
I mean,
Utah?
Holy cow, 3-0 Vegas lead. Utah comes all the way back, has the lead, surrenders it in the third, and we saw multiple goals in overtime.
Multiple celebrations in overtime.
Correct.
The Vegas Golden Knights thought they had scored halfway into the first OT. A rush chance, a rebound, puck is laying there, it's in the back of the net, let's all celebrate. Wait a second, as we know now, every play in the last minute of the third period and overtime gets reviewed, and Jack Eichel was offside by literally a quarter of an inch. Like, you look at all angles, and once the puck clearly gets over the blue line, the full puck is over the blue line, his skate is maybe an inch in front of the blue line, it is offside. They come back, and then it's Shea Theodore that ends up getting the
beautiful
goal.
Beautiful goal from Shea Theodore. And again, though, I mean, you just the Eichel presence was huge last night, three assists, and Vegas finds themselves 2-2 now in this series. So.
Yeah, I mean, they were close to be in a place where they would have lost three in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, after thinking, like, Vegas should be the better team, they were, what is it, 8-0-1 under Tortorella at the end of the year. Carter Hart finished the year 6-0, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, is there a goalie controversy? Well, no, because, you're still giving up a little bit more than Tortorella would want to give up, but you're tied 2-2. You're not making any changes. And, yes, that was a big goal by Theodore. Vemelka got swimming around his net a little bit too much, and Theodore found the puck in the high slot and put it in.
All right, so that's a little bit of a recap from last night. Undoubtedly a little bit more here in D&D.
Dazzled and
disturbed.
So, what do you make of, and I have to tell you, this looked all too familiar, and I'll tell you why in a minute. The Penguins' game-winning goal against the Flyers, Dan Vladar.
So there's a long shot from the point. It goes off the end wall. Vladar thinks it's going to probably either bounce to the back of the net or go to the other side.
It should have,
but weird bounces happen. You know, talk to Anton Forsberg on the Landeskog goal early in the Colorado LA series. It goes off the wall, hits him. But this one, Vladar Bedard was completely fooled by where the puck was going to go. This defies physics, but it hit a partition, came right back, hit him in the back of the leg, and then he's doing the best, like, I don't know where it is. I don't know where it is. Well, it just leaked over the line. It's a bad bounce. It's disturbing because, I mean, it's a big goal in the game, but at the same time, it's just a bad bounce. There's nothing a goalie can do on those.
There's only one goaltender in history that this play reminds me of. Who is he?
One goalie in history? Oh, that's Kevin Lankinen.
No.
Oh, well, that was Tage Thompson when he missed.
It was different because they didn't have this against the posts.
Stefan Fizet.
Dominik Hasek. I said to producer Sam, I said, I can't tell you how many times that happened to Hasek in the course of his career because it always stood out. Save after save after save after save. And then something unimaginable, some stupid bounce, some hand of God, some whatever, where Dom was like, I don't know where it is. And then it's in the net. That was such a Hasek moment for me, which is hilarious to say, given that he's the greatest of his era and likely all time.
Maybe Mike Smith would have been one, because when but the again, butt goal different. Happened it's and he slid though. Back trying to hold himself above the goal line, but he was in.
And
different, but yeah, I think there's Hasek is a good one to think about.
We still have
Tim
goalie
Thomas
talk.
Would have been one too.
We still have goalie talk coming up after the break, but real quick on the Carconi who missed a glorious chance last night. So, this is also disturbing,
but at first glance when Carconi of Utah got the puck, he has a wide open net on Carter Hart, and you're thinking, how did you miss it? But then you look at the replay. The puck was on edge. It was kind of in front of him. Oh. He had the pitching wedge out, and then his reaction is, oh, my, how did I miss this? And
like
look, it was
1-0
Vegas. Then it ended up being 3-0 Vegas shortly after
remember
that.
Remember the Nick Foligno miss earlier this year in Chicago? He was even closer. He was like,
oh, yeah,
he was less than half that distance to the goal and somehow missed. And man, oh
but
man.
Carter Hart making a move with his glove to come back, it affects the shooter thinking, I got to go up. Think of Bo Byram, the goalie scored against Jeremy Swayman. Swayman diving, like Bo Byram needed a good shot. And that's why sometimes players miss on those tight opportunities.
Okay, quick break. Awards week is upon us as far as the nominations
it
are concerned.
Already?
And we will be narrowing down our Vezina candidates when we come back here on Sabres Live. It is, of course, a game night, Game 5, coming up in Buffalo tonight.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Game 5 coming up tonight. Sabres looking to advance. They lead the series against Boston 3-1. Who's been the series MVP so far for Buffalo? At Sabres Live, our Twitter poll, Bo Byram continues to lead with 64% of the votes.
And we've got some write-in votes, and obviously the Blade Gang was part of these write-in votes. Benson is winning the write-in section, getting under the skin of Boston. The goal in Game 4 was a big one for the Sabres, so Benson is getting some love in the other category.
You're going to hear award finalists unveiled this week through the NHL, and obviously we're going to start with the Vezina, because those finalists will be announced tomorrow. Who are your three for top goaltender this year?
So for me, it would be Vasilevsky, Swayman, Sorokin. I know there's maybe an East Coast bias into that look, but they were the best three goaltenders, I feel, in the National Hockey League this season, and it would be in that order. Vasilevsky would win the Vezina, it would be Swayman and Sorokin after.
Couldn't You're be shaking. More wrong. Vasilevsky, Wedgewood, and Thompson are the obvious three.
You know what? Wedgewood and Thompson would be like 4 and 5.
As selected by the NHL 32 GMs, yes. Celebrini, Kucherov, and McDavid have been announced as the finalists for the Ted Lindsay Award, which was just unveiled today. As far as the goaltending is concerned, though, in the Vezina, someone who, to my knowledge, never did receive any Vezina votes in his legendary career, but that's about the only thing that John Garrett didn't accomplish, because he touched the lives of everyone in and around this game as a WHA legend, an NHL battler in the crease, and a terrific human being and personality in the game as a broadcaster and friend. We have lost John Garrett at the age of 74, shockingly and unexpectedly, and, you know, just looking at our friend John Shannon from Sportsnet, and obviously all the years at Hockey Night, he said the universal refrain, I love that guy. And that is all you hear about John Garrett today.
Yeah, John Garrett. Every time we went to Vancouver, Vancouver was in town. It was so good to see him. Obviously, a member of the goalie fraternity. Over 500 games combined between the WHA and the NHL. A stylish goaltender. Go look at pictures of him playing for the Whalers, the Nordiques, the Vancouver Canucks, the mask, the style. But even that, he was so good behind the mic as an analyst. We'll miss him tremendously.
We will see you tonight. It is Game 5, Sabres and Bruins. Our pregame coverage begins at 7.